Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning. It's good to be with you. My name is Michael, one of the pastors on staff here at The Dwelling. And if this is your first time with us, hold on, I got a tag sticking out and my kid's receipt. You know, that's fun. Kid stuff. It's good to be with you this morning. If I have not met you yet, I would love to connect with you. We would love to connect with you. There's a couple ways you can do that. One, you can grab a Connect card. I think we have them on the seats near you or over at the table. You can fill that out, put that in the joy boxes on the side or the back, and one of us will be in touch with you. Maybe you have some prayer requests or just want to know more about our church. That's probably the best way to do that. We also have a gift for you. So if this is your first time with us, we have a gift outside where you walked in. That is just our way of saying, hey, thanks for being here today. Couple things that we want to just kind of highlight this morning. We started this last week where we were highlighting some of our different serve teams that we have here at The Dwelling that makes things kind of run around here. Last week we highlighted our amazing kids team that pours into our kids week in and week out over in the rooms over there. This morning I want to highlight another fun team. It's called the Setup Teardown team. You know, it's so fun. But so necessary, right? Some of you maybe don't realize that this place, believe it or not, is not a normal church during the week. So we have to kind of do a lot of kind of work some magic around here to make this place be inviting and just be more of a place where we can come and worship Jesus on Sundays. And so there's a team that does that every week before and after service that comes together and just makes that happen. So the more the merrier on that front. So if anybody's interested in that, put that on a Connect card. Just put on their setup team or whatever you want to put, and we'll be in contact with you on that. But all the roles around here we believe are crucial to just creating space for people to come and feel like they belong and that they're part of what Jesus is doing around here. And that being said, everything we do around here is an act of worship. We believe that. And if you call The Dwelling home, we want to just continue to make sure we're putting forth how we can give back to God through The Dwelling. And so you'll see that on the screens there on how you can do that. I'm going to be doing the reading of the Word this morning, so if you'll stand with me if you're willing and able. We are going to be reading out of Acts chapter 2 this morning, and I realize I forgot my Bible, so I'm going to just read off the screen this morning. So we have Acts 2, 42 to 47. It says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You can have a seat.
Good morning, and I'm sorry, keyboard person. I'm going to steal yours to put my notes on. That's okay. I'll put it back. I promise. I will. I don't want to mess up your iPad, though. We're good. It did not break. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Denise. I am Michael's other half, but can I move these? I feel like there's a wall between me and you guys. I'm sorry, band. Don't hate me. And watch, I'm going to drop these iPads now, and it's going to just not be good. They're never going to come back, you guys. Never. Ha! Ta-da! Yes, I'm using that one. All right. Deep cleansing breath. We're good, right? We're good. We are starting a new series today, and I'm excited to be able to kick it off. As we enter, we just had our first birthday anniversary, birthiversary, whatever we're calling it, as a church, which is super exciting. And so we are entering into year 2 now, which is wild. And so we want to take a minute to revisit, as a church, what our core values are. What are we about? What are the non-negotiables for The Dwelling Church? What makes our heart beat? And so today we're going to kick it off with this idea of transformational community. And it's something near and dear to my heart, I know, so I'm excited to get to dive into this with you today. But as I was preparing, I was thinking about the season when Michael and I, Emery, who is now almost a teenager, thoughts and prayers, please. She's a good kid. She was barely one when we moved here. And we, some of you know, Michael and I both are born and raised San Diegans. We lived our whole lives in San Diego, deep, deep roots in San Diego. We had lifelong friendships. We had family. We knew the city. We were so connected. And so we up and moved, literally packed. I mean, we were newly married pretty much, so we didn't have much at the time, but we packed everything in a U-Haul. And we drove across state lines, and we moved to Reno, where Michael got a position at a church. But it was this season where, for the first time in my life, I felt like I went from having this robust community with people around me, people I was safe with, had history with, to suddenly I was in this new place where I literally knew nobody, like not a soul in Northern Nevada. And Em, like I said, was a baby, so I was in my new mom era where you're like in pajamas all day with like spit up on you. That's kind of a like lonely season in itself because everything revolves around this, you know, keeping a tiny infant alive. But also, I got to keep my job, yay, paycheck. But it meant that for work, I was working from home. I was at a laptop by myself for like 8 to 10 hours a day. So this season when we first moved here was really lonely, kind of disorienting because I felt like isolated and it was hard to meet people. The highlight of my week though during this season was Fridays because Fridays is when Michael was off. And so he got to stay home with Emery, and I got to enter the land of the living. And what I would do every Friday is I would go to this coffee shop down the street from our apartment called Walden's. It's this like mom and pop spot in Reno. They have a few locations now, but I would go to Walden's every Friday, and I would order my toffee nut latte. I'd get my bagel with pesto cream cheese. If you guys have not had pesto cream cheese, it will change your life. Just do it. And every Friday, I would go and make my order. I would go get, there was a table I liked to sit at because it was in the corner, and I would like to kind of like hide in the corner. And so every Friday, this was my rhythm, and I loved it. And then there was one Friday where I walked into Walden's, and the barista said, "Hi, Denise." She knew my name. And not only my name, she knew my order. I didn't even have to order. And you guys, this sounds so silly, like a coffee shop encounter, but it changed things for me. There was something in me that pivoted that day because I felt known. I felt seen. I felt like I belonged to this community that I found myself living in that was so new and kind of isolating for me. There's something so powerful, right, in that sense of belonging, of somebody seeing you and knowing you. And it's powerful. And that's what we're talking about today in the context of church, with community in church. But before we get to the nuts and bolts of what community is, I want to kind of lay the groundwork for why community is important. So we're going to go way back to the beginning, like Genesis 1 beginning. Scripture starts with creation, right? With God creating and forming and filling the earth. And there's this rhythm where we see God create something. And then what? He says, it is good. So there's this rhythm. He creates, it is good. He creates, it is good. And it's kind of this crescendo that builds up until we get to the pinnacle of creation where God creates man. In Hebrew, it's the word Adam, which is why we call him Adam usually. And I've said this before, you guys, I'm convinced we're going to get to heaven and find out his name is Steve or something, and we're going to have to apologize. But it's okay. He'll forgive us. So God creates Adam. He creates a person in his image. And he doesn't just say it's good. He says it's very good. Something's different with this part of creation. But in his next breath, God says something really interesting. It's the first time that he says something is not good. And it is the fact that he identifies that Adam's alone. It's just him. And true, Adam has God's presence, right? Which is incredible to think about. But he's still isolated. He does not have another Adam to share life with, to cultivate the land with, to collaborate with, and live day in and day out with. And so we read in Genesis 2:18 where God says, it is not good for the man to be alone. So God, we know how the story goes, God creates a partner, right? He creates a wife, Eve, and they are fruitful and they multiply and they have this family. and then from their family lines, nations are born, and we see how that evolves. But this idea of it not being good to be alone, it translates beyond just marriage. We're not just talking about the family unit here. We see this theme all throughout Scripture, actually, of where God intended for us not to be isolated, to be part of something that's bigger than ourselves, that it is not productive or healthy or beneficial to do life alone. The design was always for us to be part of a community, of a family, of something bigger than just ourselves. So fast forward today, there's not just two people, there is now 8.2 billion people on the earth. Like, it went crazy. There's people everywhere, you guys. In the U.S., we are the third most populous country in the world, and we have 347 million people just within our borders. There's people everywhere. You guys, I'm an introvert that rarely gets alone time, so I'm a little jealous of Adam. I would love to be in a garden alone sometimes, but here we are. But it's not just presence like people around us, right? We have Facebook, we have Instagram, TikTok, we have Snapchat, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. There's texting, there's emails. We are connected in so many ways, and the world can feel small with that sometimes. I was laughing so hard the other day. So my son's in fifth grade, my daughter's in seventh grade, and their schools issue them laptops to do schoolwork now, which is just crazy to me, because we had like computer lab once a week when I was their age. Now they have their very own computer. And their phones have to be locked up during the day. They can't have their phones at school. So you guys, this new generation, they've resorted to emailing. This is how they communicate during the day. And Emery, she's like horrified right now. She's talking about a friend, and we were talking about her boyfriend, and she's like, she emails him. And I'm like, this is the world we live in, where you email your boyfriend during school. But that's what you do, right? But if you're not in junior high, and you have your phone on you all day, we're tethered to people all the time, right? We know what they ate for dinner, what they wore to the gym. We know what their kids' sports score was. We know all these minutiae and details of their lives, even if we're not present with them. And even though we are more connected and intertwined than ever, don't we know that that connectivity is not the same as community, right? Even though we're so connected, there's still something missing. We're endlessly connected, yet studies continue to show that people are feeling more and more isolated. Depression and anxiety are on the rise. They are higher than ever. The former Surgeon General, his name is Dr. Vivek Murthy, he made this telling statement in an interview about what some call the epidemic of loneliness. He said this. He said, "You can feel lonely even if you have a lot of people around you, because loneliness is not about the quality of your connections." Sorry, I messed that up. "Because loneliness is about the quality of your connections, not quantity," right? It's the quality of the people in our lives. There's actually been research over the last 20 years of social scientists who are studying places that have been called the blue zones around the world. And these are areas where they've identified people not only live longer, so there's longevity, but people live happier and healthier lives. And so they're called blue zones. And they've kind of identified these nine traits that these places all have in common. And one of those nine traits where people live longer and happier and healthier is places where they have a strong sense of community, where they have these quality enduring relationships, where lives are interconnected on the daily rhythms that they live. And I think it's not a coincidence that both the Bible and science are telling us that we were designed for meaningful community. So as a church, this is one of our pillars. It's creating and protecting and extending this idea of community, and it's always going to be a priority for us. When we say our tagline, you know, is a place to belong, we're saying that we want to be more than just Sunday acquaintances, right, where you come and maybe say hi. But we want to really, truly share life and build depth and meaning in our relationships that reflect the heart of God. And our desire is to create those spaces where this can happen, where people can wrestle through life and faith together. And so we call this pillar transformational community, because we believe that we're not just creating a country club, right? We're not just creating this little like pocket where we can exist in a bubble. But it's this context of having life together and sharing life together that we see relationships deepen both with God and with each other. But we also see growth, we see healing, we see change, and that's where we talk about that transformation piece, that we are being molded more into the image of Jesus. But this type of community, it doesn't just happen by accident, right? It doesn't just happen because we want it. It's intentional. It has to be cultivated. So this morning, I want us to consider five facets or five ingredients, if you will, to what makes a good community, a transformational community. So the first one is this: proximity. Transformational community, it requires physical presence. We're kind of in a unique age of the church where most churches, and us included, will somehow post their messages online, right? Whether it's on YouTube or their socials or a podcast, the content gets disseminated via, you know, social outlets, right? And this can be helpful. It's a really good tool. Like, for example, if you're trying to check out churches and find somewhere to get plugged in, you might check out messages online to see if their vibe and kind of what they're about resonates with you and you're in alignment. Or maybe you're sick and you can, you know, watch online to stay and connected. But here's what also can happen. We use those platforms as an excuse or justification to not show up. Because now we can just watch at home in our jammies, right, with our toffee nut latte and our bagel with pesto cream cheese. The danger is this, that when that happens, we reduce church to just consuming content. But consumption has never been the primary purpose of the church. The purpose of the church has always been people-oriented, right? So when Jesus was calling his disciples, his followers, he didn't say, "Yo, check out my podcast, give me a like and a follow, please." He invited them into sharing life. For 3 years, they were together, shoulder to shoulder, day in, day out. They ate together. They traveled together. They did ministry together. They were in proximity physically together. And that then spilled into what we see in the early church, how they did church. And Michael read Acts 2, where it says, "All who believed were together. They had things in common. They were selling possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all. They were taking care of each other as they saw needs pop up." It says, "Day by day, attending the temple together, breaking bread in their homes." They had each other in their homes. "They received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God, having favor with all the people." And the next verse, it says that God was adding to their numbers daily. And I think it's because when people see that sense of community, they want in. They want to be part of it. Who wouldn't? So we see God using that. So when we envision building community here at The Dwelling, it's that picture of I'm opening up my life to you, you're opening up your life to me, and we are going to walk shoulder to shoulder, sharing space, sharing a table, sharing rhythms of life together. So proximity. The second facet of community is this: transparency. Transformational community, it requires vulnerability. Ew, we don't like that word. We have learned to curate what people see of us, right? We only want to show our good side, our polished side, our put-together side, the strong side. I think social media is a good example of that, right? How committed we are to controlling people's perception of us. There's a Christian psychiatrist, his name is Kurt Thompson, and he was giving a talk at a conference one time about this very topic, about community, a biblical community, healthy community. And he said this that kind of stopped me in my tracks. He said, "We are only able to be loved to the degree that we are willing to be vulnerable." And I'm going to read that one more time because it is packed. We are only able to be loved to the degree that we are willing to be vulnerable. There's this tension, right? We want to be loved. We want to be accepted. We want to belong. But at what risk? Being honest and real can be so scary. Sometimes it's easier to hide, to protect, to withdraw, isolate ourselves, to stay quiet. And I think part of it's pride, maybe part of it's fear. I was thinking back. So Michael, when he joined Hope Church in South Reno a while back, it's the church that helped launch The Dwelling down here, we started a small group, a life group, and it was kind of geared more for young families, young marrieds. And it was crazy just the... We had our first meeting, and we were pretty new to the community, so we didn't even know a lot of people yet in South Reno, but we had like 13 couples or families show up, and it just showed me that there was such a craving for us to belong to something. And so we started our life group with a series on this topic, on community, kind of talking about collectively, what do we want this community to look like? How can we build this? Kind of what are our core values as a life group going to be? And one of the questions that we talked about 1 week was, what keeps you from experiencing true community in your life? And one of the guys, who now is a dear friend, but at the time we had no context for him. There was no, like I said, relationship going into this. And to be honest, he kind of intimidated me. He was like a hard dude to figure out. But I remember vividly, he said, I'm afraid if people knew the real me, they wouldn't like me. And I just thought, wow, that is so honest. Because I think all of us resonate with that to some degree, that if people really knew us, they wouldn't like us, or they would push us out or whatever, reject us. So I think in the depths of our souls, we all feel that, right? And here's the cool thing, is that when you risk transparency, it invites others to do the same. You open that door for when you're transparent and vulnerable, other people can reciprocate that back. There's a quote from C.S. Lewis, a writer, who says, friendship is born at that moment when one person says to another, what, you too? I thought I was the only one. And I think that is the basis of friendship, right? Where you find these commonalities where you feel so alone, but it does take risk. And we all have those barriers that we put up to being transparent, to being vulnerable, being open, things like pain or shame, fear. And those things keep us in the dark. They keep us hiding. They keep us isolated, right? And they keep us in these patterns that are not healthy or helpful, which is why I love 1 John 1:7, where it says, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, if we let ourselves be exposed in the light of God's grace, and we show our real selves to people, it says the fruit of that is that we have fellowship with one another. We break those walls down, right? We invite people in. It says, and the blood of Jesus cleanses us from all sins. There's a cleansing, there's a healing that happens as we walk in the light together with each other. And so when we talk about transformational community here as a core value, it's we want to build relationships that call each other out into the light, where we stop hiding and we can be real together. And by living in the light together, we experience that healing and that growth and that transformation. So our third facet of community is this accountability. Transformational community requires humility. And this is another word we don't write, like, right? Accountability, if we're honest. It can conjure up, usually when we think accountability, we can think of maybe being called out or getting in trouble, someone kind of putting us in our place. And I don't think as a whole our culture deals well with that. We tend to react with, like, don't tell me what to do. Like, you don't know me. What if we redefined accountability, though, as simply calling each other to more? Calling each other to who we were meant to be, seeing the potential in each other. With intentional relationships that are centered around the ways of Jesus, two things happen that help us in our spiritual formation and in forming community and relationships. If we're open and humble, exposure is one of those things that our blind sides can be revealed. Don't we know that the people closest to us see our ugliest side, probably our most real side, though? They see our most authentic selves. And so the people close to us can speak into maybe if we have an area or an opportunity for growth. But it's not just exposure, right? It's encouragement. It's not just about being called out, but being called up. So we have these safe people that might expose things in our life, but they're also there to walk with us as we work on those, as we grow, as we seek maturity and moving forward and seeking Jesus in these things. And both exposure and encouragement they're crucial to our spiritual maturity, to fostering deep and true friendships. And we get a picture of what this looks like in Scripture. So Proverbs actually has a lot to say about relationships and community and friendships. But I think probably one of the most well-known proverbs about this is Proverbs 27:17 that says, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. And it's this image of you have these two pieces of metal that are dull and useless. I think of we got a knife set when we got married, and I just replaced it last year. So I had 15 years with these knives. You guys ask me how many times I sharpened them. Zero. So when I got new sharp knives, it was like, it was great. So you have these two dull, useless pieces of metal, right? And I don't know if you've ever seen a knife sharpener. It's almost like a boxer. Like they have this like 1-2 rhythm that they do where they're like striking, you know? And I think we can kind of picture this analogy in Proverbs 27 as iron sharpens iron like that, like a knife sharpener where it's like one swipe you're exposing, the next swipe you're encouraging, and it's this back and forth. exposing, encouraging, right? And it's not just one knife that's getting sharpened when we do this. It's both. They're sharpening each other simultaneously. And in our relationships, this looks like us refining each other, sharpening each other, unleashing new levels of purpose in each other. And that is the fruit of accountability and humility within community. Fourth, we have shared purpose. Transformational community requires a common mission together. And this does not mean that we create with community only with people who are exactly like us, right? Who think like us, act like us, vote like us, live like us. Unity is not the same thing as uniformity. I think the best communities are ones where it's diverse, where you have people in different stages of life, different experiences, different perspectives, different passions. But the thing that keeps you united is that common mission. You have a common vision together, something that you're collectively pursuing together and working towards together. And that is what can bring strangers and make them a family. It's powerful. We see Jesus when he left his motley crew, his disciples, to go return to the Father. Some of his final words were issuing a common mission for them to rally around because he knew they were going to need that singular vision if they were going to stay unified. And he says in Matthew 28, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them and teaching them how to live out all these things I just taught you." That was the mission he gave them. You guys need to unite around this. And ultimately, that's our mission here at The Dwelling as well, that we want to make and mature and multiply disciples. We want this to not just be here where we're wrestling faith and life together, but that it spills out into our individual context during the week to Carson and beyond. And in that common purpose, sharing that together is what brings people together, and it propels depth. And I'm going to power through. Fifth is consistency. Transformational community requires commitment. Now, we started the first one with proximity, talking about how we need presence, physical presence, and that's one aspect of it. And I want to end with another aspect of presence, and that is that idea of consistency, of showing up. It's been said that the real currency of relationships is time or your presence. Studies say that it takes 200 hours with someone to move from considering them like an acquaintance level to a true friend. 200 hours. So that means if we limit our involvement to 1 hour on a Sunday, it is going to take us almost 4 years to make a friend. That is wild to think about. But when we commit to showing up, to engaging, to participating in other ways, it expedites that formation of friendship, of community. I think that's why in Hebrews 10 we read it says that let us not consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another. And all the more as you see the day, it's talking about the day of Jesus' return, drawing near. And there's a lot of things, kind of like with vulnerability, how we have excuses and barriers. I think there's a lot of excuses and barriers that can keep us from being consistent of showing up to a community. Maybe it's busyness. I think that's a big one. Awkwardness. Maybe you just feel awkward because you don't know people. Conflict. Maybe there's a conflict, and instead of working it out, you run and find the next church down the street. I think it's so easy to become apathetic or indifferent, maybe cynical even. In our culture, you know, if something doesn't come easy or quick, we have a tendency to bail instead of leaning in. It's kind of like working out. Right? Like, you might be super motivated, like New Year's resolution. This is my year. I'm going to get healthy. I'm going to lose weight, be fit. And you're motivated. You're excited. And what do? So you start going to gym. But maybe the results don't come as quick as you're hoping. You get a little defeated. And then, you know, maybe something comes up and you're like, I'm going to skip today. It's just one day. It's fine. But then skipping one day becomes skipping 2 days, becomes skipping a week. Then you're skipping a month. And before you know it, you feel awkward, like, showing up at all, right? Because you're kind of a poser. Just like the benefit of working out doesn't just come from, like, thinking, like, I want to get healthy and fit. It comes from showing up and doing the thing, right? You only get that benefit from consistency of doing what, showing, exercising that muscle. And it's the same with community. You have to be an active participant. The more you show up, the more you'll get out of it. So those are the five maybe ingredients or facets of what really goes into creating a beautiful transformational community where Jesus does incredible healing work and lives are changed and people feel a sense of belonging. We have proximity, transparency, accountability, shared purpose, and consistency. And those aren't the only things, but those are the five today that we're going to touch on. And I think the invitation in this for us today is to ask ourselves, which one of these five is the hardest for us? Which one of those five is the barrier that's keeping you from experiencing that depth in relationships, of feeling like you belong in a community in a fuller way? Maybe it's, you know, thinking of, am I too busy? Am I prioritizing other things instead of getting involved in a faith community where I can know and be known? Do I have walls up with people? Do I, like, not let people in because I'm scared? Does showing up and contributing rather than just showing up and consuming and then leaving intimidate me? Do I feel like I maybe don't have something to offer? I think there's so many questions. And so my encouragement to you this week is to spend some time in prayer. Seek God and ask him, where am I holding back? Expose these areas where maybe I'm not fully leaning in to community. And ask him to reveal, maybe there's a next step. Maybe he's inviting you to take a risk, to take a baby step towards being involved, making a friend, contributing. Because when Jesus said that he was establishing his church, he was not talking about a building, right? And he wasn't talking about programming. He was talking about people. The church is people. And so it might sound idealistic when we say that at the dwelling, this is our core value, and we really do want to create a culture of people sharing everyday life together and the nitty-gritty, the sometimes messy, but the always there for each other kind of way. We want to be a collective of individuals and families who are choosing to rebel against this epidemic of loneliness that we hear about, to be committed to this sacred, slow work of leaning in and becoming family rather than retreating and isolating and doing life on our own. Pastor Tim Keller said this. He said, to be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear. But to be fully known and truly loved is a lot like being loved by God. It is what we need more than anything. It liberates us from pretense, humbles us out of our self-righteousness, and fortifies us for any difficulty life can throw at us. So how do we get there? We can talk about it all day long, right? But how do we get there? Especially for those of us who maybe feel disconnected, who are craving having people around them that they can share life with, something deeper. I would say, remember that community is not built overnight. It is slow, sacred work, and it has to start with baby steps that build on each other and set a trajectory. So maybe it's an invitation to somebody. That's scary. Inviting someone to something, but maybe that opens a door. Maybe it's sharing coffee or a meal with somebody. Maybe it's as simple as asking somebody a question to foster conversation, get to know them just through talking to them. It's all about continuing to show up and just put yourself out there. And here at the Dwelling, I mean, I know we're a newer church and we're still getting things built and off the ground, but we do have things in place already that are easy on-ramps for you to get involved with. One is life groups. We have life groups that you can join and be a part of. It's never like you missed a window. Oh, I got to wait for next year. You can always dive in and join. And we want to expand life groups so that there's more places for people to connect, more communities to be a part of. And so maybe it's praying about leading a life group or hosting a life group. And seeing if God has something for you there. The other thing I want to mention is Alpha. Alpha is ongoing. I think they've met for the last 4 weeks, but there's still weeks ahead. And you can dive into Alpha. If you don't know what Alpha is, it's here Sunday nights. You share dinner and you sit around a table and talk. So it's a really great way to just have another avenue where you get to meet people and talk. And maybe you're not a talker, but you can still come and eat and listen. That's what I love to do. We love to have food around here. The last thing is this, serving. Michael shared that we're doing kind of spotlights on different serve teams. There's different opportunities to show up and get plugged in, and there's a place for you. There's a place for everybody. And here's the thing, we need you. And not because it's like we can't do church without help. I mean, that's a part of it. But we need you because you have something unique and beautiful that only you can contribute. And we're missing out when you choose to not be a part of it in a deeper way. Like, we would love to see what God has gifted you with and how he's wired you and what you can contribute to make this just a vibrant and full community where we all learn from each other, encourage each other, and share together. So those are just a few ways that we have that you can get involved. But ultimately, our prayer is to create space where honesty can replace performance, where grace can interrupt judgment, and where depth can grow through us just sharing life together, being who we are, where we are, but just opening ourselves to each other, and all in the name of Jesus. So we're going to move into a time of communion. Michael's going to come up and lead us in communion. We do communion every week. If you need elements, Rick's not here. Moses, my man Moses, thank you. Moses will have elements. But we do communion every week just so we have this space to pause and be reminded of what Jesus has already done for us, and that we can remember the work of Jesus. You're good. Yeah, you're good.
All right. So yeah, at the Dwelling, we do communion every week. And for us, it's about consistently developing that rhythm, that muscle, if you will, to remember and not forget the power, the potency of what Jesus did. And what I think I love about this message this morning is nobody demonstrated this better than Jesus. We see in Philippians 2, right, that God did not consider equality with him something for us to truly grasp, but instead made himself nothing. And we see that demonstrated in the very person of Jesus. The nothingness in the sense, not so much of being nothing, but being human, being vulnerable, like Denise said, being transparent and being himself around those people and showing us what it means to live in that community. And so he said, as often as you meet, do this in remembrance of me. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take the bread, which represents his body given for us. So let's go ahead and take that together. In the same way, he took the cup and he said, "This represents my blood shed for you. Without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness of sin." And that's what he offers us. So let's go ahead and take and drink together. Afterwards, if you need prayer, our prayer team is going to be up front. They would love to pray with you about anything that you have need for. And I'm going to pray, and then we're going to respond into a time of worship again. God, thank you for this moment. Thank you for this place. Thank you for the message this morning. May we press in, God. May we lean into what you have on offer. But ultimately, God, may we embrace with our heart and our mind the grace, the forgiveness, the life, the fullness of life that you have for us in Jesus. And we trust you with that, God. In Jesus' name, amen.